everybody. Welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. I know it's been a hot minute. Obviously, I've been doing some travel. I was down to New Zealand, had a really good hunt down there, and a great experience. I'm really looking forward to trying to get back there in the future if I can. And then since I got home, it's just been hectic. It seems like summer really fully kicked in. My kids are out of school. Yard work fully ensued. And my regular daytime job, you know, working at Go Hunt, you know, it got hectic. So obviously we're trying to get podcasts out for the Big Hunt Guys podcast that goes out once a week. So that's been busy. I've been writing some articles. We got through the end of application season. So you had Wyoming deer and antelope, you had Arizona deer, bison, fall bison, bighorn sheep, you had Idaho, all controlled species, deer, elk, antelope. So we were trying to get through those draws, and that just got really hectic. A lot of people asking questions and answering emails and DMs, and just got hectic. So my apologies for not getting an episode out sooner. I wasn't able to get out any before I left because it was just full on application season, just super busy. But back with an episode this week, and then I think going forward through the summer, I'll be able to pump out an episode probably once a week. That's my goal. You know, if you hold me to it, I might fall short, but that's the goal. I'm going to try to do that. So with that, I want to hit you with a promo code. You can use the promo code GAMETRAIL. That's GAMETRAIL. When you sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account, when you do that, you're going to get $50 back in the Go Hunt gear shop. That's $50 that you can use towards the purchase of any type of gear that you want, including archery equipment, which is always my personal favorite. It's typically where I spend most of my money in the Go Hunt gear shop. Also, if you're already a member and shop in the Go Hunt gear shop, you can use that promo code GAMETRAIL and save 10% on pretty much everything in the shop. So use that promo code GAMETRAIL. I would appreciate it. That would help me out. If you listen to the episode, you like it, leave me a review. That seems to help the algorithm. I don't know much about algorithms, but I'm told that a review helps. So give us a review. I'd appreciate that. Also, Matthew, shout out to Matthew's Archery as a sponsor of the podcast. I have a new Matthew's bow right here sitting behind me. This is Chris Porter's bow. This is a brand new Lift X33, and I've been working on it and building it. And I've been working on a few bows from other people, just some friends lately. And that's really kind of where my mind's been at. I just finished a big article. I think it was about 13 pages that I submitted over to Brady, and I'll go through the process and I'll hit the front end of the website here shortly. But it was basically all about tuning, bow tuning. So seems like after those draw results have come back, you know, people have a tag in their pocket. It seems like the excitement level for the approaching archery hunt really ramps up and people are getting excited and they're trying to get their bow tuned up. You've got those summer 3D archery shoots. A lot of you attend TAC events. I know that. So people are really trying to put time and effort into getting their bows set up and going. Whether you bought a brand new bow, like Porter got a brand new bow right here out of the box, or whether you're putting new strings on, which is pretty common this time of year. I feel like May and June, everybody is, you know, buying new strings. Maybe you haven't replaced them for a year or two. They're trying to get new threads on those things and get them tuned up. So I wanted to talk bow tuning. Like I said, I wrote that article, and I think I wanted to just approach, you know, bow tuning. Before I left on my trip to New Zealand, I was on a podcast called Knock Talk with this fella, Kevin, who's a good dude. I really like his podcast, but as part of that, he asked me, you know, what's your bow tuning process look like? And I don't feel like I answered that satisfactorily. Is that a word? To my satisfaction, I should say. I just don't feel like I fully answered it. It was kind of off the cuff. Sometimes when you're doing podcasts, it's hard to, you know, get your mind right and be able to answer a question to what you actually think you should. And so I wasn't really satisfied with the answer that I gave him. So I wanted to dive in and run through to the best of my ability, my tuning process in a more systematic way, if you will. And hopefully I can drop some ideas and tips that'll help you guys out. I, by no means, am a master, you know, bow tuner. I have been doing it long enough that I feel like, I have a good understanding of the dynamics of a bow and arrows and how it works. A bow is a dynamic machine. You know, you make one adjustment to one part of the bow, it has the potential to affect other parts of the bow. So if that's, you know, twisting a cable, it's going to impact your draw weight, potentially your draw length, you know, your cam timing. It's this dynamic machine. So you kind of have to have a bit of a working understanding of how the whole thing works, which I feel like I do have. And I can tune a bow for sure. And I do all my own work at home. I will say that I would encourage people, you know, use your local pro shops if that's what you got. I think there's definitely good qualified techs. There's some great pro shops out there. But I think there's a certain level of satisfaction and confidence that you gain from doing your own work at home. There is that initial investment that you're going to have to make. So things like a bow press, you would have to have, you know, you're going to be into that thing about 500, maybe 400 bucks for a last chance easy press green. A couple other tools I think are really handy. A draw board is really handy. So that last chance draw scale or draw board is really nice. It's a couple of pieces that fit in the end of your last chance press. And those work together, and it makes it really nice for adjusting things like cam timing and really checking that, making those changes. Draw length, it's really, really important for draw length. And, you know, I think I said on Kevin's podcast, I think draw length is probably one of the most important critical factors into you being able to aim well and execute a shot well. So it's really important to have a draw board, I think. Other tools, I think a handheld draw weight scale. So be able to check your draw weight, be able to check your holding weight. And that might not seem like that big of a deal. I think a lot of people just assume that, you know, when you get a bow or you place the strings on your bow, that your bow is going to, you know, always be 70 pounds, if you will. That's not always the case. Sometimes those things can get out of spec, and, you know, maybe your draw weight's going to come in under, or, you know, potentially over, which is probably less of a problem for most people. But typically, you know, if your bow's not drawing the draw weight that you think that it should, you want to be able to check that with a draw scale, and you want to be able to know how to fix it and get that up to, you know, par. So those are some tools that you might need. I think they're definitely worth the investment. I would say, you know, if you're kind of on the edge of it, just bite the bullet, do it, get the equipment, get set up in a little workspace in your house. Mine's in a little closet type area that's just out the back here of my main office where I work from home. But I would say make the investment and just jump in and do it. There's all kinds of resources online, including YouTube's a great resource. Hopefully this article that I just wrote that's going to go live on Go Hunt will help you. It's got tables and charts, everything included to help you understand what changes you would have to make to your bow to get that thing tuned up. So with that, I'm going to kind of dive in and hopefully systematically kind of run through how I build out and tune a bow. So when I pull a bow out of the box, it's brand new, or if I'm going to replace my bow strings, typically what I would do in that instance is I would put the new strings on, or I would pull the new bow out of the box. And one of the first things I do is I like to take inventory of where the bow is at, and I like to measure out the specs of the bow. Now, when people talk about bow specs, they're typically talking axle to axle length, brace height, draw weight. I would say those are probably like the three, you know, that people most often talk about. So what I like to do is I grab that brand new bow. First, I like to measure the axle-axle length. That's going to be from the center of your axle, so that your axle is the little rod there that's going to go through the middle of your limbs, through the cam. When you look at any modern compound bow, it'll be pretty easy to see, you know, what I'm referring to as far as the axle goes. Basically, what you're going to do is just measure that in inches from the center of one axle to the center of the other on the shelf side of the bow. And you want to compare that back to the factory specs. So if you were to jump on Matthews' website and you were looking at the Matthews Lift X33, they're going to publish and tell you what the axle to axle and the brace height should be. So I like to compare that back to the factory specs. I also like to measure the brace height. So the brace height is going to be the distance from the throat of the nock, kind of the lowest point of the, not the nock, the grip. So the lowest part of the grip here to the edge of the string. So that front part of the string to the lowest part of the grip. And that's going to be your brace height measurement. Again, compare that back to what the factory suggests that it should be. The next thing I like to do is I like to draw the bow back with a scale and just see what kind of poundage it's pulling. You know, ultimately I want that bow to pull at a minimum, you know, the poundage that it's advertised as or it's listed as. So if it's a 70 pound bow, if it's a 75 pound mod on a Matthews lift, I want to make sure that the draw weight is meeting that minimum of, you know, 70 pounds. Now, most new bows, it seems like anymore, you pull them out of the box, you pull them back, it seems like they're hitting slightly above. So it's not totally uncommon for a 70 pound bow to hit 71 or 72 pounds out of the box. I think that's much less of a problem for most people. It might be an issue for someone if, you know, 70 is all that you want to shoot and you can't comfortably draw and shoot, you know, a higher weight, draw weight and holding weight. Might be an issue, but for the most part, most people are kind of okay within a pound or so over. But not a lot of people are going to be stoked if their bow isn't pulling, you know, that minimum poundage of 70 pounds or whatever it might be for the bow that they got. So I like to check those three specs. I just want to know that that thing is close to what it should be. The other check that I like to do is a quick cam timing check. And this is before I start any process of building or tuning. Cam timing is important because essentially what you want is you want your cams to be rolling over as you draw that bow, and you want the draw stops to be contacting at the same time. Now, some bows have limb stops where that stop rolls around and actually comes to rest on the limb. Other bows, like a Matthews, has what they call a cable stop. And as that cam rotates around, it's got a little bit of a lip right here on the mod, and that's going to come to rest and contact the cam. Now, what you want is those two cams to roll over and completely hit at the exact same time on each one of the cables, which is going to give you a nice firm back wall. Also, those bows are designed to tune with the cams perfectly timed. Now, there are some tricks. You could run one slightly advanced of the other if you feel like it's giving you a better hold, and then you could use other parts of the bow, like the position of the rest, to tune out any inconsistencies in your arrow flight. But for the most part, bows are designed currently have those draw stops hit exactly at the same time, and that's typically a check that I do. Just out of the box is a quick cam timing check. Now, you don't actually have to draw that bow to check it. You can actually check what they call the cam timing marks. So different bows have different marks. I believe a Hoyt has a line that kind of works in conjunction with your cable that sits behind it. A Matthews, if you look at these cams, they've got these little timing holes that sit right here. And you'll see that these cables run behind this little hole. And you can kind of get an idea if you look through that hole where the cable, each cable is in relation to that hole. So visually, I can look at this very quickly and I can say, yeah, this cam is close to being in time, both cams, or yeah, this cam looks slightly advanced because the relation of that cable running through that hole is different than the other cam. So that's a quick visual check that I like to do. I think this is really more important when you're replacing your strings. When you get a brand new bow and you pull it out of the box, the factory is going to set your cam timing, and it may not be exactly right, but typically I would tell you it's pretty close. You're going to have to make very minor adjustments to actually get those cams, you know, timed. Now, when you're replacing strings, I have had occasions when the cam timing was visually out before I even got started. And what I like to do in those instances is make those adjustments to get the cam timing close before I dive into any other part of the process. Now, later on, I'm going to actually, you know, time my cams. You know, I'm going to spend some real time working on those and getting them exactly timed. But before, you know, I do anything else, I do want to do a quick timing check. And if there is any issues, I want to try to get it close. I want these cables on a Matthews bow to be running through that hole, essentially the exact same orientation on both cams. I want to make sure that it's close before I even get started. So that's my quick cam timing check. Those are the three or four things, I guess, I always check before I even get started on building the bow. All right. So one of the next steps that I do is I just install my rest. So I'm going to put my rest on. You can see here on Chris's bow, I've got a QAD drop away. This is the integrated rest. This is a cable driven rest. So I like to install my rest. I put the rest on. And when you buy these rests from QAD, one of the reasons I kind of like them, there's a couple of these reasons I really like them. But one of the neat things is that those are going to be set from factory exactly where you need to be. So the height's going to be zeroed out. The distance, your horizontal travel, is going to be set at 13/16. So that's a nice little perk. Now, there's no issue whatsoever in moving this rest up or down later in the process as you start your tuning. Not a big deal whatsoever. But the horizontal movement, the windage, if you will, I like to leave that set at 13/16. So if I get one of these brand new out of the box, I don't touch it. The windage, I should say. If you're putting a, you know, an old rest on a different bow, I set that rest at 13/16, which is, for most bows, it's going to run right down the center of the shelf. It's going to be that great center position. It's typically going to offer you the most clearance to your cable guard from your vanes. So I like to just set that and leave it. There are other means that I can often use to tune out my left and right paper tears or issues with a bear shaft when it's flying. I can typically do that with today's modern compound bows with features like limb shift technology on a Matthews, which allows me to shift the space between the limbs, or, you know, an elite bow, if you will. It's got this pivoting limb cup feature where you can essentially change the load to each limb, the pivot on it, to tune out your left and rights. Different bows have different features. Some, I know Darton, I believe, you can actually increase the load on one limb with a kind of a set screw that goes into it. But most bows right now have tunability built into them so that you don't have to mess with moving your center shot on your rest. You can typically use cam spacers, pivoting limb cups, limb shift technology to actually tune it out. And I like to do that because I just like to leave that rest in a center position. So first, I like to put my rest on. My next step at that point is going to be to install my peep. I do like to install a peep. I do that before I tie in a knocking point. I do that because as you put in a peep, if you think about it, it's actually going to create a little space in your string. Essentially, what you're doing is, you know, shortening your string, if you will. So it might potentially impact your, you know, your cam timing. Your peep location is going to potentially impact like where you put your knocking point. So I like to install a peep. It doesn't have to be perfect by any means. You know, you can move that up and down at a later stage, which I will touch on in a little while on where I like to actually set my peep height at. But I like to install the peep. I also like to insert my rest cable, the drop away cable. So like I said, this QAD is a cable driven rest. So you're going to put the cord through the down cable kind of underneath this piece of serving here. Other bows that use a, or other rest, I should say, that use a drop away that is limb driven, like a Hamsky. Less of a big deal at this point. The reason I like to put in my accessories in the string and the cables before I move to other steps, because like I said, it's going to take up some space. So you can see that even including this little drop away cord right here between my cable, I'm creating space between the two bundles of the string. And I'm, in essence, I'm shortening this cable ever so slightly. And I want to do that because I want to, you know, later date when I start to do my cam timing, I want to make sure that that is incorporated because that's how it's going to be as I shoot that bow. So I like to do that, kind of get it bare bones set up. The next thing I like to do is tie my D-loop, historically, what I would have done is I would have tied in a soft knot knocking point on the serving, and I would have put the arrow at a 90 degrees from the string. So this 90 degree angle string to top of the arrow. and I would have ran that arrow centered through the burger hole. So the burger hole here is the where you mount your rest. So this little hole right here. So in essence, what I would have done historically is I would have set that arrow to 90 degrees to the string, tied in my soft knocking point. I would have ran the arrow through the center of the burger hole, and I would have gone to the tuning process. So whether that's paper tuning or bear shaft tuning, what I'm doing now is slightly different. So I've been reading, I watched some stuff online. I think it makes a lot of sense. I've been talking to Chris Neville. He's also a super tinker when it comes to bows and arrows. So, in essence, kind of a new train of thought for me is just putting on a D loop on your center serving in an approximate location to where that arrow is a 90 and it's kind of running through the burger hole, but not tying a soft knot. So not actually deciding where your knocking point is going to be. The reason for that is because there's this train of thought that you may be able to move your D loop either up or down in location on the serving there to essentially get that bow to aim better to where it holds best for you. I'm going to dive into that here in a sec. Before I do, one thing I like to do before I actually start that process is I like to really fine tune the cam timing at that point. So I've got a D loop on it. Got a rest on it. In essence, what I want to do is I want to put the bow in a draw board and I want to spend time actually timing my cams. And I want to do that before I start moving that D loop up and down the center serving to try to find out where that bow is going to aim and hold the best. The reason I do that is because I want my cam timing dead set at that point. And as you move this knocking point or your D loop up and down, those cams will still stay in time. This was really interesting to me. I watched recently a video that George Riles did. I didn't realize, I thought that, you know, your center location of your D loop, would impact your cam timing. And he did this really cool experiment where he ended up moving, the D loop way up and down the string and still putting the bows in a draw board and proving that your cam timing still stays. So I thought that was really interesting, but I do like to time my cams at this point. Now I'm going to give you a brief explanation of kind of how to time your cams. I like to put twists or remove twists from my cable. Like I said, you've already pre-checked to see that they're close or made those adjustments prior to this point. But in essence, if you have a top cam that's hitting first, you can add twists to the top cable that contacts the top cam. And you can see here, as I pull this, in essence, what I'm doing is I'm pulling my draw stop further away from the cable as it rotates forward. So I'm actually just pulling that back. So as I'm twisting this, I'm shortening the cable and I'm pulling that draw stop further away so that as it rotates, it will then, you know, rotate and hit the exact same time as the bottom cam, which was, you know, hitting second. So you can do that. The other thing that you could do is you could remove a twist from the bottom cam. So if I remove a twist, in essence, what I'm doing is I'm advancing this draw stop. So there's two fixes you could have if you had a top cam that was hitting first, or a top draw stop that was hitting first. You can add twist to the top cable cam, or you can remove twist if you want from the bottom. And those work in conjunction. You can kind of work them back and forth. If you have a bottom cam draw stop that's hitting first, you can add twist to the bottom cam, or you can remove twist from the top cam. You could also do some fixes with you wanted with the string. It's important to me that I note right now that I typically try not to take or remove twists from the string. Your cables are they have a much greater impact on how much your cam rotates or does not rotate. So, you know, a half or a full twist in a cable is going to move that cam much greater than a half twist or a full twist in a string. Typically what I do is I use the cables to get it as close as I possibly can, and then maybe potentially use either a twist or a twist out, an untwist, if you will, of the bowstring to really fine tune and make sure that I get these cams draw stops both hitting the exact same time. There is another little trick that I think you can use. I've used it quite a bit, which is to take a small piece of D loop material, just a little tiny piece like that, if you can see it, burn both ends. And often I will put that in between the string bundles of the cable to actually take up a little space, suck that cam around a little bit, and make sure that it rolls over and hits at the exact same time. So in essence, what I'm doing is I'm shortening one of those cables just by putting a little bit of a spacer. Now, there are companies that actually sell spacer kits, and they sell them in different widths, if you will, that you can install between your cable bundles, the string bundles, and take up that extra space and actually advance those cams. So I say advance, but what I mean is actually take them further back, if that makes sense. Hopefully it does. You just got to kind of think about it logically, like as you're thinking this process through, like, okay, what am I doing? And a lot of the times when I'm working with cam timing, I'll just grab a cable and I'll pull on it and see what it does. So you can see as I grab this cable here and I pull it, I can see which direction the cam is rotating. And I can see that my draw stop right up here at the top is rotating further back, meaning it's going to take longer distance to actually rotate around and hit this cable. Same thing if I pull it the other direction. You know, if I was to lengthen this, obviously this would shorten, or this would lengthen, and my draw stop would hit sooner. Same thing by pulling on the string. You can give the string just a little bit of a tug and see what the orientation of your cam does when you do that. So sometimes you just got to think it through. Really tuning a bow, setting up a bow, a lot of it's problem solving. It's just thinking, you know, through the processes and then working it out as you go. I would tell you, go slow, take notes for sure. If you're at a removing twist to your cables or your string, take notes of it so that if it just doesn't feel right, you can essentially get back to like a homeostasis and then start the process again. But really it's just problem solving and note taking is paramount to that. Okay, so I've got my cams timed perfectly at this point. I have a D loop, I've got a rest on it. I got my peep in it, which is basically just occupying space. I've got my drop away cord that's running through the bundles of my down cable beneath the serving here. I've got that set up. So the next step that I'm going to do is I'm going to actually do aiming drills. So I'm going to knock an arrow. I'm going to draw the bow back with the position that I've got the D loop in, and I'm going to pick a small dot that's, you know, relatively close, just here in my basement, maybe 8 or 10 yards. And I'm just going to aim. I've got my sight on it here at this point also. So I'm just going to do aiming drills. I'm not going to actually shoot any arrows. I'm just going to draw the bow back and see how it feels. And I'm going to take note of it. After that, I'm going to rotate my D loop up the serving. So rotate it up to where it's moving up in location. I'm going to do the same thing. Draw my bow back, aim. How does it hold? After that, I may move the D loop down the serving within reason, obviously, and just take note. How does the bow aim based on the location of the D loop on the serving? And I think what you eventually kind of arrive at is a D loop position that seems to optimize or help you aim better, more steady. So give that a try. That's a new shift for me. Like I said, historically, I would have just gone straight to a knocking point, arrow through the center of the burger hole, and I would have went to paper tuning, and then I would have just lived with however the bow aimed and felt. I think this little trick of moving your D-loop up and down the serving to find the sweet spot for you and the way that you grip the bow, you know, your draw length, all those factors, I think it can really help improve your aim and your hold. I know that in talking to Neville prior to going to Vegas and we shot the Vegas shoot, Neville shot really, really well. He felt like that was a paramount step and a major mind shift, change for him, in getting a bow that aims and shoots well. And he's been shooting really, really great. So I think there's a lot to this little trick of actually finding the best D loop location, up and down your serving. So after I've done that, I've made notes, I found the sweet spot for me. I like the way that the bow is aiming. Next step for me would be to tie on a knocking point. So this little soft knot that you can see right there, you can choose to tie a lower or a lower and an upper knocking point, which your knock would sit in between. For years and years and years, I don't know exactly why, I'm trying to remember. It's probably been close to 10, 15 years, I've only ever been used a lower knocking point. I know that recently I've seen some guys talking. I know Dan Staten's been talking about it, Bodie, Joel. I remember Levi back in the day talking about this. Basically, those guys were saying that when you use a lower knocking point only, you knock an arrow and you put that thing in a draw board and you draw it back, that they felt like the alignment of the knock as it sits in this groove was better. Like it set more flush, if you will, rather than having a bit of a tilt one way or the other, which you kind of see sometimes with two knocking points. In saying that, I've looked at a lot of bow setups and many of your top level archers are using two knocking points, one below and one above, that sit just inside your D-loop. So I don't know that it is a critical factor. I think it's more of a personal choice. I like when I put my bow in a draw board and I pull it back with an arrow knocked. I like the way it looks. It looks to me like it sits more flush, if you will, with one bottom knocking point and then my D-loop top knot kind of serving as my top position. I've heard people say online, how are you going to replace a D-loop and ensure that it's in the exact same spot if you don't have a lower and an upper knocking point tied on your center serving? You still have a lower one, which to me is like the reference point. And then my upper knot, obviously I feel like I can cut that D loop off and simply put a new one on. It's going to be the same location because my bottom knocking point should not have moved. Now, it's not always the case. Sometimes those knots and your D loops can kind of walk up your serving as you get some serving separation and the string kind of starts to break in and stretch. But a good quality string that has a tight center serving, typically no issues in my opinion that I've seen. I will often take a Sharpie and just make a knot or a mark on my serving to as a double or a triple check, if you will, to make sure that that hasn't moved or migrated. But like I said, that was a long explanation to why I just use a single bottom knocking point. So basically, I'm going to tie that thing in on the inside of my D-loop. As I get further down the process and draw length and release the length of the release head and how that all works in relation to my anchor point and how well I feel like the bow aims, I may end up cutting the D-loop off and changing the length of the D-loop. But for the most part, like that is my knocking point and I found it by migrating my D-loop up and down to what I feel like aims and holds the best. Now, when you do that, you know, it's unlikely that your arrow is going to then be running at a 90 degree through the center of your burger hole. It may be when you get that arrow set up at a 90 degree, it might run high in the burger hole or low in the burger hole, depending on, you know, where the best position for your D-loop is. In my opinion, not a big deal. That arrow is going to land wherever it lands in relation to that burger hole. It's not really ever going to be majorly out of position, in my opinion. And at that point, in order to tune the bow, I can actually move my rest up or down to kind of tune that out. So I can still get that arrow at a 90 degree from the string, but I'm going to do that by moving my rest either up or down to essentially tune and kind of work that out. So that's how I set that up. So at that point, I've got my D-loop in the spot that aims the best. I've got my soft top knot tied in. I will put the arrow on the string. I'll line it up and I will set the rest height so that that arrow is sitting at a 90 degrees from the string. And it's going to land wherever it lands in relation to that burger hole. Not a big deal. And at that point, I'm going to go ahead and I've got a bow that's pretty well set up at that point. You know, my peep is probably not going to be in the spot that I'm going to end up leaving it. I try to set it up just for initial stages at a peep height where I can drop back, I can aim, I can line up my scope housing, I can look at my pins, you know, just as a reference. And, you know, at a later date, I'm actually going to set my peep height at a further distance. So in a hunting situation, most of your shots in the field, in my experience, are going to be in that 40 to maybe 60 yard range. So I like to set my peep height eventually, like when I'm really dialing this thing in at 50 yards. So what I want to do, set my bow up, make sure it's tuned. Then I want to go out to 50 yards, pull the bow back, and I want to reference whether I need to move that peep up or down when I'm at 50 yards so that the peep, the actual aperture, lines up nicely with my scope housing as I'm looking at that target at 50 yards. So that's kind of a little trick, and that's where I'll eventually get to after I've tuned the bow. But that's how I set my peep height for, you know, final before I go hunting and before I actually even tie that thing in. So got my peep in, D-loop, everything set up. Obviously talked about my rest. My next step is to actually bolt on my stabilizer. So I will put on my front bar. If you're going to shoot a back bar, I would put the back bar bracket on. I would put the stabilizer on. I'd put some weights on it. Now those are going to change eventually because those are going to kind of, you know, help you aim or stabilize your aim. And you may end up adding some weight or removing some weight throughout the process. But the reason that I put on my stabilizer before I actually go to paper tuning or bear shaft tuning is because these are going to impact your tune of your bow. I see a lot of bows that guys pick up and they just set up and they paper tune them with no accessories on it, you know, basically just the rest. No stabilizers, no sight. And they get sent out the door and, you know, hey, you're good to go. But all of your accessories are going to work in conjunction with the rest of your bow as a dynamic system. And it's going to help. It's going to dictate how that arrow comes out of the bow. So I include my stabilizers before I ever move to paper tuning. Okay. So now I've got my bow completely set up. The next step I'm going to do is typically paper tuning. So the process of paper tuning is relatively simple. You know, I was going through this with Chris Porter last week when I was down there in the Vegas office. And this is the first, you know, modern compound bow he's owned. He had another one that was Lorenzo's bow. He shot it last year a decent amount. We put some time into tuning it and stuff. But this is like really the first time he'll have gone through like the whole process of, you know, tuning a bow to him and how it works. So paper tuning, he had lots of questions about paper tuning. So, paper tuning is you're going to stand at a distance. I would say most pro shops I've been to, they're going to put you like 5 to 6 yards, from a piece of paper. And then you've obviously got a target behind that. And what you're going to do is you draw the bow back, anchor in, get comfortable and then execute a shot and shoot an arrow through the paper. Now, the goal of paper tuning is you're trying to get a clean hole, if you will. So the point of the arrow would be centered, going through perfectly clean, and extending from that hole, you would see the tear of your veins very clean through the paper. And as you look at a really clean paper tear, it's just a hole right in the middle with the veins coming off, just tearing super clean through the paper. And that would tell you, give you an indication that your arrow is flying true. It's flying directly out of your bow in a straight line. It's coming out of that thing. The both of them, you know, the arrow and the bow are talking to each other. They like each other. It's working. And there's a bunch of factors that go into paper tuning in regards to the arrow setup. And I'm not going to dive into that at this point. I'm going to assume that you have an arrow build that, you know, has suitable spine is really what I'm talking about. It's stiff enough that, it can satisfy the draw weight and the draw length that you are. So I'm going to assume for this process, I'm not going to dive into arrow spine, but I'm going to assume your bow and your arrow like each other in regards to spine. So you're looking for that clean tear. Now I'll go back and revisit distance. You know, I think in my experience, I've done a bunch of reading. I've done a bunch of testing. I used to just start at like 5 or 6 yards and then I would move back a few at a time and I would continue to shoot that same arrow through paper and make sure that I got a clean paper tear at various distances. What I found is I think like 7 yards, maybe 6, 7 yards seems to be the distance where it's telling you the most about the tune of your arrow and your bow. So right now when I'm tuning a bow, I just jump back to like 6, 7, maybe even 8 yards, somewhere in that range. And I just start there. And I feel like if I can get a good paper tear at that distance. Generally, I can move out to bare shaft tuning and I'm going to have good results. And then, you know, eventually broadhead tuning, which is the ultimate goal anyway. But I start at that like 7 yard mark and I'm just going to shoot an arrow through paper and see what the tear tells me. When you're paper tuning, just some tips, I would tell you, you know, shoot more than one arrow through paper. An individual arrow, is going to tell you, you know, that that individual arrow likes the way that the bow is set up, but that doesn't necessarily translate to every single arrow. So it might be that you shoot an arrow that you pick out of your dozen, you shoot it through paper and it gives you a high tear. You might grab another arrow, shoot it, and depending on how the nock is orientated, you know, it might shoot a clean hole. So the reason I like to shoot multiple arrows is because I want to see that I'm getting consistent results. Also, before I make any changes to the bow, so whether I approach, before I approach the rest position or, you know, cam timing or anything like that, I like to turn the nock of the arrow and shoot it again before I move on. And what I'm looking for is if I can get an arrow by nock tuning. So nock tuning is essentially turning the arrow shaft, maybe a quarter turn at a time on the nock and then reshooting it through paper. I want to know that that arrow definitely won't tune before I make any adjustments to my rest or, you know, any other piece of my bow. And typically if I've got like a minor tear, a lot of times I can work that out just by turning the nock and reshooting that arrow. I had an arrow maybe a week ago I was setting up on Chris's bow. Actually, the arrow that I picked out had a slight nock tear high. I just flipped that arrow 180 degrees and shot it again. Perfect bullet hole. So the orientation of the nock and then the stiffness of the spine and where that lands in relation to the way that it's nocked can impact your arrow flight and your tune and your paper tear. So work out the details before you actually move on to, you know, moving any parts or pieces on your bow. That's one of the reasons, like I said, I like to shoot multiple arrows through paper from the same dozen because I want to make sure before I make any changes that I'm actually making changes that are applicable to the tune of the bow and not just the individual arrow. So paper tuning. Typically, you're going to get four different types of paper tears. People, you know, there can be combinations of them, but basically what you're talking is a nock tear high, meaning the point went through the paper, the nock and the veins were higher than that. So that's a nock high tear. Nock tear low, exactly opposite, meaning the point went through the middle and the nock and the veins were low, below that point. Nock tear left, meaning that your veins were left of your point of impact with the point, and then nock tear right, which would be the exact opposite. So right fletching tear, right nock, if you will, right of the point. So there are changes that you can make if you're seeing those. So a nock tear high, first foremost, easiest is move your rest up. You could look at your cam timing to see what your cam timing looks like. Often, in my opinion, if you're getting some nock high or nock low tears that you can't seem to work out really with the rest, you can move your cams. So adjusting your cam timing. And in a lot of cases, I see those types of tears and I will put the bow back in the draw board. I'll pull it back and my cam timing will be slightly off. So it wasn't necessarily the, you know, the rest position as it was just the cam timing. But I'll start often with moving my rest. So like I said, nock tear high, move my rest up, nock tear low, move the rest down. Nock tear left, you're going to move that rest to the right. Nock tear right, you're going to move the rest to the left. This is a question I get asked quite a bit when you're paper tuning. Well, what does it mean for a left-hander? It means move the rest the direction. I think where people get confused is that if you think about the geometry of a left-handed riser and a right-handed riser, they're slightly different. And people will typically say, hey, if you want to work out a nock tear left, you need to move your rest towards the riser. Well, that would be opposite for a left-hander. They would still be moving the rest right. It would just be further away from the riser. So I think that's the confusion, if you will. You got to kind of think of it globally. So nocturne left, you're going to move your rest right, regardless of you are a left-hander or a right-hander. Same thing if you have a nocturne to the right, you're going to move your rest to the left, whether you're left-handed or right-handed. So just a little distinction there. So nocturne low, you could also, you know, adjust your cams. Typically, you could twist the bottom cam cable. You have a nocturne high, you could twist the top cam cable. A nocturne left, you could move your cams left, or a nocturne right, you could move your cams right. And this is where it gets into that, you know, the thing that I talked about earlier about bows having the ability to move or shim your cams, really, or your pivot point of your limb pocket. So when I start seeing nocturne left or nocturne right, what I do is I don't move my rest. I don't make any adjustments to my center shot. What I like to do is use the features of the bow. So on a Matthews bow, you've got this limb shift technology where you can actually change kind of the spacing between the two limbs, which in essence is going to change the load on the limb, one limb or the other. So you're kind of creating that space. But basically, if you look at these limb shift technologies, there's going to be some spacer marks at the bottom here. You're going to remove a set screw, and then internally there's an Allen key, and you can turn that thing either clockwise or counterclockwise. And there's actually little arrows on the limb here itself, but you basically just move that left or right. Other bows have different features that are very similar. You know, I saw that the new Truth Archery bows, they've got a similar type of feature. Bowtech has a similar feature. I already noted Elite, which has the pivoting limb pocket. But in essence, I'm going to leave my center shot at 13/16, and I'm going to use limb shift technology to make that adjustment left or right. So I think this is a point of confusion for people. So if you were going to tune out a left or a right tear on a rest, you would move it the opposite direction. Whereas if you're using limb shift technology on a Matthews bow, you're going to use the same direction. So if you have a left tear, you're going to move your cams left. You have a right tear, you're going to move your cams right ever so slightly. You're going to retest by shooting through paper, look at the results, and then, you know, make adjustments as you go. So slight distinctions. I know that with Matthews older bows that use the top hat system, what I would do is I would find the combination of top hat spacers that go between the cam and the limb here, and I would get it as close as I possibly could where the paper tear was so close. In a lot of cases, I could get it to be perfect, but if I couldn't with my rest set at 13/16, I would get it as close as I possibly could with those top hat spacers. Then I would make minor adjustments with my rest. And at that point, I could get a really clean paper tear. It's important when I talk about paper tuning that your grip has to be consistent. I know when I was tuning this last week with Porter, he needs to work on his grip a little bit. He's brand new, like I said, to archery. He has this tendency, like a lot of new people that pick up a bow and arrow do, to like death grip the bow, really get into it with the full palm of their hand, if you will. They get all four fingers kind of wrapped around the riser. So he's got some, you know, some learning to do and just some repeatability of actually keeping that grip nice and, you know, centered in his hand here, kind of this side of the lifeline. I've talked about grip before, but you're basically kind of looking at your knuckles at that 40 degree angle, you know, lightly touching the front of your riser with maybe your pointer and your bird finger. But he's got some grip issues that he needs to work on, but I could tell, because I could shoot his bow through paper with my grip and I could get the same tear consistently time after time. He was getting a little bit of torque induced into, the paper tear based on his grip. So, if you're trying to paper tune at home, think about your grip, because really it's going to be, it's going to depend on how you grip the bow. Now you can tune to your grip within reason, but, you know, for the most part, you got to think about your grip before you really start making any major changes, with, you know, your rest or whatever it might be. So think about your grip before you get too deep into paper tuning. I'm going to jump down to bear shaft tuning. So bear shaft tuning is typically the second process that I move to. This is something that I didn't used to do. I used to, paper tune. Then I would just go out, throw on a fixed blade broadhead, and I would start shooting that thing at distance. I have started bear shaft tuning because I just wanted to have more confidence in my setup. And usually if I can paper tune to a perfectly clean hole and then I can get an arrow to bear shaft tune, at that point, I'm almost certain I can put in any broadhead and I can shoot out to extended distances and have good results. So bear shaft tuning is also relatively simple. What that involves is you're going to take some arrows that are fully fletched, set up arrows, the ones that you've probably paper tuned with, you know that they're shooting clean holes through paper. You're going to take some of those same arrows without fletchings. So they don't have that guidance that a fletching provides an arrow. So it's really going to tell you a lot as you shoot those arrows at distance, what your bow is doing with that arrow. It's going to tell you how straight is that arrow actually flying out of the bow, because at that point you have no vanes to guide the arrow. So in essence, all you're going to do is, you know, sight in at 20 yards. You can start at 10 yards if you want. I like to start at 20. So I'm going to sight in at 20 yards with my fletched arrows. And then I'm going to start shooting bear shaft arrows, unfletched, and fletched arrows together. And what I'm looking for is I'm looking for the bear shafts to hit in the target at the exact same point and then also the same orientation. What I mean by that is I don't want my bear shafts going into the target and then they're kicked way tail right or tail left or tail up or tail down. I want those to enter into the target with the same orientation that my fletch shafts do. And I also want them to hit the same point of impact. Now, if your bow's tuned really well, you're going to be able to shoot bear shafts and fletch shafts out to some pretty good distances. Obviously, form and consistency is going to be really, really critical when shooting bear shafts, because you don't have that correcting factor of the vanes to kind of bail you out. So it can be, you know, finicky based on, you know, how consistent you are. I would tell you that for the most part, if you can get a bear shaft and your fletch shafts to hit the same point of impact and the same orientation out to maybe 30, 40 yards, you're working with a bow and arrow setup that's really liking and working for each other, and your form's consistent. There are people that can consistently shoot bear shafts out to 70, 80, 90, 100 yards. I talked a little bit about it on the Big Hunt Guys podcast this last week. I was doing some testing, some playing with a new dozen Easton 5.0 arrows in a 300 spine. Built those up. Those are super lightweight. They're like 420 grains, which is lighter than, you know, pretty much any arrow I've shot for a number of years. But I was really surprised. I was able to paper tune those arrows and then go out and, you know, bear shaft tune with them and get those arrows to group and fly really well together, even out to 80, 90, 100 yards, which I was super surprised with. Obviously, when I make mistakes, the bear shafts show it. The results are dramatic. Those points of impacts are not even close. But when I make good shots with both the bear shaft and the fletch shaft, they group together at further distance. I think it's probably a testament to that arrow. I think it must have a pretty consistent spine throughout the arrow. And then also just to the tune of the bow. That bow that I've got, which is a Matthews Lift X, the way that I've got it built out in tune, and that arrow are talking. They like each other. It's working for each other. So when I do my part, good things happen. So bear shaft tuning, slightly different than paper tuning as far as that the changes that you make. So I want to run through those real quick. So if you shoot bear shafts and they are left of your fletch shafts, you're going to actually move your rest left. Okay, so you're going to move them the direction of your miss. If you want to adjust your cams with this Limb Chef technology, you would move your cams to the right. So bare shafts, left of flat shafts, move your rest to the left, you move your cams to the right. Okay, so those are two different things that you could do to address the exact same issue. And depending on the bow that you've got, you can address those by doing one or the other. I like moving the cams, like I've said, because I like to leave my center shot set at that 13/16, which is kind of the center of the shelf. Okay, so bare shafts hitting right of flat shafts, you're going to move your rest right. So if your bare shafts are missing one direction or the other, left or right, you're actually going to chase that. You're going to move your rest the direction of your bare shaft misses. Cams in that instance. So if your bare shafts are right, you're actually going to move your cams to the left. And I know this is confusing as you're listening to it. Even myself, I get, you know, twisted up in it. I would tell you, you know, take a screenshot, read the article when this comes out, because it's all going to be included in the tables. Okay, so bare shafts high of flat shafts. This is a little different. You're actually going to move your rest down. Bare shafts low of your flat shafts, you're actually going to move your rest up. Okay, and you could also do some things with cam timing in each one of those situations, either up or down. But if I've got my cams perfectly timed at that point, I do move my rest either up and down to make those adjustments. So, and those are the same as broadhead tuning. So like I said, you know, if you wanted to skip the step of bare shaft tuning and just go to tuning your broadheads and shooting your broadheads, you could do that. In those instances, the changes that you would make to your impact points of your broadhead are essentially the same as your bare shaft tuning. So if your broadhead hits left, you're going to move your rest left, or your cams right in that situation. Now this, I think, is probably one of the biggest points of confusion that I get all the time from people. So people will shoot their broadheads and their impact point will be left of, you know, their flat shaft with fill points on it. And what they'll want to do is they'll actually want to move their rest to the right to like bring that broadhead back into to the center. Which is incorrect. In essence, what you want to do is you want to chase your broadhead misses with the direction of your rest, either left or right. So if your broadhead impacts right, you're going to move your rest right. What you're going to see as you're doing this is you're actually going to see your fill point kind of moving over and those groups starting to impact together. And that's the end goal. The end goal is to get your broadheads and your field points impacting at the same point. Now, when you do this, they're not going to impact the center of the dot that you're aiming at. Okay. The goal is to get those to group together, field points and broadheads. Once you get those grouping together out to your maximum effective yardage, what you're going to do then is move your sight. Okay, so you're going to move your sight last. So once you get your broadheads, your field points grouping together, then you're going to move your sight windage to walk the entire group, field tips and broadheads, into the center of the dot. Okay, so let me run through the changes for a broadhead tune. So your broadhead, it hits left, you're going to move your rest left. Broadhead hits right, you're going to move your rest right. Broadhead hits high, you're going to move your rest down. Broadhead hits low, you're going to move your rest up. Okay. So it's that simple. Hopefully that helps you guys. Like I said, the take home of this is to ultimately get your broadheads to hit well together. So that's my tuning process. Hopefully that helped out. Hopefully it wasn't too convoluted or confusing. I know that this stuff gets, you know, in the weeds and it gets pretty deep. In essence, if I had to like wrap it up and, you know, tie it with a bow, first thing I do, measure the specs, match the, bow specs that I have to the factory specs. I want to make sure it's holding draw weight. I want to make sure the axle is just right. I want to make sure that the brace height's just right and it matches the factory specs. cam timing, spend your time on cam timing, D-loop location, spend your time walking your D-loop up and down that center serving, doing aiming drills before you actually tie in a knocking point. I think that's super critical. You know, rest, leave that rest at 13 16ths. If your bow has tuning features built into it, like the Matthews does with that limb shift technology, let it be, and then use your shift or your pivot on your limb cups, like on an Elite. Put your accessories on before you start to paper tune, bear shaft tune. I think you can kind of fine tune your weight at a later date. And even when I do, I like to go back and check the tune on the bow because those things can change. Don't be afraid to tinker. You know, dive in and learn. I think this stuff is going to make you a better bow hunter. It's going to make you a better archer. It's going to make it more fun for you as you start to like chase those results and make those changes and see what happens for you. But that's my process. And like I said, when I started the podcast, I wanted to answer that more in depth. If you guys got tuning questions that you think, excuse me, my voice is cracking. I've been talking too much. If you got questions that you think I can help you out with, you know, don't hesitate to reach out to me. If you think I missed anything or you do something different that you think would be beneficial, I would love to hear about it. But with that, that's for the episode for the week. I'll be back next week with a guest, and I appreciate you guys listening. So, you know, have a good day and shoot straight.